So, imagine this. You're in the grocery store doing some shopping, and you're nearly tripped by a toddler who's racing up and down the aisles. You look around for this child's parent, and finally you see the mom over in a corner chatting with another mom, completely oblivious to the havoc her child is causing. It was a near miss that could have put you in the hospital. You judge the mom to be an inattentive parent, and you huff off to finish the rest of your shopping. Or you're attending a fancy banquet at a nice club, and you go in and you come to your assigned table and you put your things down to save your spot while you and your wife go and socialize in the bar area during the cocktail hour. You spread out your things, very clearly marking your territory. But when you come back, someone has placed their drinks down in your place. You judge them to be rude and inconsiderate, and you quietly look for somewhere else to sit. Or you're at work, and the phone rings. It's a client, and he is irate because of some mistake that has been made. He's been trying to reach your coworker for weeks, and he's now going and has not gotten a response and threatens to switch firms. And you, once again, find yourself in the position of having to clean up the mess that your coworker made. You judge her to be lazy and incompetent, and you mutter about her under your breath all day long. If any of these scenarios have happened to you or anything similar has happened to you, welcome to the human race. We all judge other people, and we are all judged by others. It is by far the most commonly confessed sin and one of the most difficult character defects to remove. I was talking with a group of people the other day in preparation for this homily about judging other people, and I asked them, I said, is it just me, or do you tend to judge people too? They all laughed hysterically, and one of them, you know, said, Father, I judge people all the time, every single minute, every second of every day. Everybody does. It's the new normal. We judge people all the time. And then someone else said, and our society encourages us to judge other people, especially on social media, right? With thumbs up or thumbs down, or like or don't like or whatever. We are constantly barraged with opportunities to give our opinion about something, to evaluate something. In fact, one person said, you know, I order something online, and the minute it is delivered, I get an email like that. Hey, how did you like it? Do you like the product? How was the Amazon delivery experience? Was it good? Was it bad? It's constant, constant, constant. And with a culture like that, always asking us to judge and evaluate, it's not surprising that most of us have a problem with judging other people. Most of us have a problem with judging other people, and that would include me. I judge people all the time too. I hate to admit it, but I do. I judge the guy running out on the footpath, right? He's running without a shirt on in 55 degree weather and it's foggy outside. And I think to myself, who does he think he is? It's freezing out here. And by the way, he doesn't look nearly as good as he obviously thinks he does. You know what I'm talking about, ladies, right? I judge people who park over the lines at Woodlands Market or don't return their shopping cart. I judge people who don't smile back at me when I smile at them, or say hi to them, or say hi back to me when I say hi to them. I'm just trying to be nice. I judge all the time, like my friends. I judge all the time, and I'm sad to say it. But I will say this, and I want you to hear me clearly, and this is the absolute truth. The one place that I find myself able not to judge people is in the confessional. Hand to God, I promise you, I do not judge people in the confessional. But outside, I can't seem to stop doing it. So I asked my friends, I'm like, well, how do you feel after you judge people? Do you feel, you know, bad about it? One of them said, no, not at all. It's the new normal. It's just a part of life. We're judging everybody and everybody judges everybody else. But I do think that deep down, most of us regret it, regret judging other people. I know I do. Whenever I judge someone, I have instant remorse. And I say to myself, you know, Roger, why did you do that? Why did you think that thought? You know, stop it. When it's hard. It's hard to stop it. And so that's what we're going to be talking about in this brand new message series that we're kicking off this week. It's called Judge Much. Take a look. That's my Bitmoji. Made him come to life. Anyway, he's cute, isn't he? Anyway, over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about how to stop judging other people. We're going to look at why we can sometimes fall into that trap of being judgmental and what we can do about it. And I actually think this is the perfect time for this series because as fall begins to ramp up, and you know, with more and more school activities and social activities, and families are coming back from long summer vacations, and just the pace of life steps up as we head into the holiday season, I think we're all going to need some help navigating interpersonal situations and hopefully overcoming our negative tendency to judge others. So tonight, I want to start by making a distinction. I want to clearly define what we're talking about. When we say judging others, it's important to know what we're talking about. First and foremost, and this is the low-hanging fruit, this is easy, we're not talking about good judgment. Good judgment is a virtue. Making good and moral decisions about your life, that's a good thing. That's not what we're talking about. We're also not talking about making factual determinations about situations or even judging behaviors objectively, behaviors that you might find offensive. That's not what we're talking about because we do that all the time. It's part of our human condition. To survive in primitive times, we had to be able to make snap judgments about whether a stranger was friend or foe based on how they were acting, or whether a situation was safe or unsafe based on the circumstances. And we had to do that instantly. And so it carries over that tendency, not that tendency, but that instinct to judge carries over into our lives to protect us and to keep us safe. And so it just sort of becomes part of everything we do, making factual determinations. For example, years ago, I was on a jury pool in the Los Angeles Superior Court system. And you'll never guess who the judge was. Anybody want to guess? Come on, the other masses got it. Judge Ito, thank you, Joe. Yeah, Judge Ito was the judge, and it was after the O.J. Simpson trial. And he was a celebrity by then. Everybody was, you know, enamored, including the attorneys. Anyway, it was a criminal trial, and it was in the jury selection phase where the attorneys have the opportunity to judge which jurors they want on the jury. So anyway, the defendant is brought in, and as he's brought in, Judge Ito sternly admonishes us, all the jurors, that we are not to form any opinions, develop any mental impressions, or make any judgments whatsoever about the defendant because he is innocent unless proven otherwise. After the defendant had been seated, Judge Ito went down the line of jurors one by one, asking each one individual, did you form any opinions? Did you develop any mental impressions? Did you make any judgments about the defendant? And every single person down the line dutifully lied and said, no, Judge, not at all. Until he came to me. And I decided, I'm just going to tell the truth. I said, well, Judge, he looks a little nervous to me. I was instantly excused from the jury. That's one way to get off a jury if you want. But I actually wanted to be on the jury. I wanted to be on it. And I felt bad after getting excused because I really hadn't done anything wrong. I did not judge the defendant. I did not believe or think he was guilty. I just looked at his body language and I made a factual determination. He looked nervous, as I would have been under the circumstances, even if I were innocent. And so we're not talking about in this series our human ability to make factual determinations based on the available information. That's good to do. That's right to do. It's okay to do as long as you're sure about the facts and you're not making assumptions and you're not relying on gossip or innuendo. That's okay, making factual determinations and even judging behaviors. What's not okay is when we start attaching value judgments to someone's character based on their behavior. You see the difference? What's not okay is to assign judgment values to a person's character based on their behavior. If you do that, you're not just judging a behavior, you're condemning a person. And that's something we have no right to do. The Bible is very clear on this. Jesus once famously said, "Judge not, and you will not be judged." It goes on and on in the Bible. St. James, for instance, says, "There is one lawgiver and one judge who can save or destroy. Who then are you to judge your neighbor?" And St. Paul is even stronger on this. He comes down harder on it. He says, "You are without excuse, every one of you who judges another. For by the standard by which you judge your neighbor, you condemn yourselves because you, the judge, do the very same things." Isn't that true? We so often judge people for the things that we do, So, what can we do about it? Well, tonight I want to talk with you about one common reason that we tend to judge other people. Over the next coming weeks, we'll talk about other reasons and what we can do about that. But tonight we're going to start with the first common reason we judge other people, and that is because we are afraid to confront them about their behavior. It's fear of conflict. Now, that may sound a little counterintuitive right off the bat, but think about it for a minute. We tend to judge other people because we don't want to go to them and talk to them about the behavior that they're engaging in that offends us. Rather, we keep it all bottled up in our brains, in our heads, right? And or worse, we gossip about it with other people. That's even worse. Either way, we become the prosecutor, the jury, the judge, the executioner. We condemn the person without hearing the defense and without even talking to the other person about the situation. And what that causes is confusion. It ends up frequently causing us to judge other people unfairly and to make assumptions about why they did what they did. And this is why Jesus says, I think, in the gospel, about how to manage conflict. And he starts off very clearly. He says, "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he listens to you, you have won your brother over." And those are important words. You've won your brother over, because what Jesus is setting up here is a way that we can approach other people who have whose behavior has offended us and do it out of love. Do it out of love, not because we want to be right or we want to give them a piece of our mind, you know. It's because it's out of love to win them over, to find, you know, mutual ground so that you can go forward in that relationship. And then Jesus also goes on, you know, if that doesn't work, you know, bring two or three friends with you for an intervention. It will also help you make sure that you're correct about the facts when you have other people kind of involved. Not gossip, not behind the scenes, but going and confronting the person. If that doesn't work, Jesus says to tell the church, or tell an authority, basically, and he's setting up a time when that would be the church. And if that none of that works, he says, distance yourself from the person. Treat them like a tax collector or a Gentile. Not because you're holier than thou, but so that you can persuade them about the seriousness of their behavior, so that maybe they'll repent and come back to the community. It's an act of love. And then most of all, Jesus says, pray. Pray for the situation, pray about the person. He says, if there are two of you, if two of you agree on earth about anything for which they are to pray, it shall be granted to them by my Heavenly Father. And he's saying that specifically in the context of trying to confront other people, caring enough about people to confront them about their behavior. So the lesson here is to try to summon the courage to confront the situation head on rather than stewing about it in our heads, and then maybe coming to unfair conclusions and incorrect assumptions about the behavior. Now, obviously, you probably don't want to do this with the guy who double parks in front of your building, or, you know, that you don't even know, or the inconsiderate person who lets the door slam on you, you know, instead of holding it for you as he passes through, or the thoughtless crowd of people, you know, who walk on that crowded sidewalk and they kind of fan out instead of walking single file. That drives me crazy, and you try to have to get around and walk in the road. Anyway, you probably don't want to, like, confront those people because you don't even know them, and, you know, it's probably not safe sometimes to do that. You might not want to confront the person or talk to the person in the supermarket about good parenting skills, you know, if it's a stranger. Probably not the right time or place to do that, or even your fellow party guest. But what you can do is talk to your coworker, for instance, about ways that you could work better together so you don't always get stuck having to pick up the pieces. That coworker may be grateful to you for the conversation. What you can do is talk to your neighbor, you know, about the loud music he seems to play every weekend. Maybe he doesn't even know that it carries that far. My dad used to play opera music and it would blast it through the neighborhood. I don't think he had any idea how disturbing it was to other people. What you can do is talk to your friend about how it just seems to you, like a lot of times, she always makes the conversation about her. If you do it gently and kindly, maybe it would be a welcome wake-up call. I know it's hard. I hate conflict. I cannot stand confronting someone. But every time I do, every time I force myself to do it, it almost always works out for the better. It's a hard thing to do, but we have to do it. So here's a few tips. I'll just finish up with a few tips. These are obvious, but I think they bear repeating. Number one, if you're going to confront someone, care enough to confront them, do it out of love. Check your motives first. Make sure you're not approaching that person in anger or, you know, for the purpose of being right or, you know, giving them a piece of your mind. Do it out of love because you genuinely care for the person and you want to come to some kind of understanding. And then, here are a few more tips. Again, obvious. And if you want to write these down, there are blanks in the bulletin. I don't know if you've ever noticed this. On the inside page of the bulletin, towards the bottom, there are message notes that you can take little notes on the homily, and it has a little fill-in-the-blanks where you can test your memory. So when you get home, if you forget something, it's right there. You know, every word I say is worth hanging on, you know. Anyway, if you want to write them down, it's right there. So here are a few tips, practical and easy and probably obvious. Number one, talk to the person face-to-face, not in a text, not in an email. The tone of those messages can be easily misconstrued. Number two, talk to the person in private. Don't do it in front of other people. That's what Jesus says. Talk to your brother, just you and him. Number three, talk to the person. Do it right away. If you're going to talk to the person, do it right away. Do it right away after you've calmed down, but not a week later. Do it right away. Nip it in the bud. Number four, talk about a specific instance of a behavior. Don't blast the person with, you know, generalized complaints about this or that. Just this specific behavior. Here's what you observed. Can we talk about this? Number five, always keep it positive. Because remember, the whole goal is reconciliation, mutual understanding. If you can do these things, if you can have the courage to confront someone that you care about their behavior, if you can do that, you have a shot at changing their behavior. It can happen. And as we heard in the first reading, it is our duty to warn people when they're going off the rails. It is our duty, God says, to warn people when they're going astray. But you know what's more likely to happen if you care front someone? You're going to come to a new understanding about the situation. You might just see the situation through the other person's eyes and grow in compassion for them, grow in understanding and patience for why they did what they did. A lot of times, if we were in the shoes of the other person, we might be tempted to do the same thing. So you could grow in your patience and understanding when you confront the other person and become less judgmental. Well, come back next week. I hope all of you will for week 2 of Judge Much, where we'll look at another reason that we judge people and what we can do about that. In the meantime, Your Honors, I rest my case.